Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yeah, we sure did. We started to burn many things we found. That's the glorious Star way of singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, B-E-R-N-Z, of many, many great things David Burns has done along with Dar and Cheat. The Solartopia song recorded a few years ago. It's our theme song here at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We're going to be spending the hour talking about election verification, election theft, electronic manipulation of the votes, the strip and flip selection of 2016, which is the title of my upcoming book with Bob Fitrakis, who will be joining us shortly. Bob, are you there yet? He is not. How about Angela? Angela, are you with us?
I'm here.
Okay. Oh, you are, Angela. Okay, and we do have Mimi Kennedy. Are you with us, Mimi?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so the glorious, wonderful Mimi Kennedy with us. We're going to start with Mimi, and then we'll talk with Angela from Waters from Reader Supported News, and my co-conspirator, Bob Fitrakis, will join us from freepress.org, one of the leading experts on election theft, co-author with me of God knows how many books. I think we've lost track already on election protection. Mimi, you are a magnificent, glorious, and totally fantastic star on the show Mom. You have been in the Woody Allen movie, The Midnight in Paris. Before I knew you, you were there, and if I'd known that you were that mean, awful mother-in-law, I don't know what I would have done. But you've had a tremendous career, but you are also a spectacular activist, totally devoted, knowledgeable and formidable in every way. And we want to talk with you and Angela and Bob about protecting our elections. You and I made a very interesting trip in Los Angeles. We drove all the way across town and inspected a very, shall we say, cutting-edge electronic voting machine that they're considering using in California. What has happened with that? It was an electronic machine. You voted on it electronically, but then it put a paper ballot into a locked bin for them to count, and it gave you a paper ballot to see how you voted. Is that right?
Well, you can't take away a paper ballot. It produces a paper ballot. It's basically a printer. You're working on a computer screen. You make all your choices, and then printed out is all your choices. So you look at that and go, yeah, that's what I just did. I want that. That's my ballot. And you then can take it over and put it in the ballot box because it's an actual tangible paper ballot, that all those ballot boxes are going to be taken to the central tabulator in Los Angeles and counted by an OptiScanner of some kind. There are a couple of, I hesitate to say glitches, let us say challenges in this system. And it isn't that we might buy. LA is developing this system, Harvey, with open source software, and they want it to delight the election protection community, but it might not because of a couple of details where, you know, the devil is always in the details in election protection. But I sat on the committee for the principles of what kind of system we needed to develop, and I was the only one pressing for a paper ballot for many months. And then over time, it was a time when Target was hacked, when the Defense Department was hacked. There was a lot of news about secure systems being hacked. And at that point, everyone else on this somewhat 40-member committee started going, yeah, we get it. It has to, if we're going to invest public money, because it is going to be our leftover HABA money, in a system that L.A. County...
Have it being the Help America Vote Act.
That's right, of 2002. We in L.A., the activists stopped us from spending half of our HABA money on an all-electronic ES&S tabulator that would have taken memory cards. We said absolutely not. We're sticking with a paper ballot, OptiScan system, no memory cards, no ES&S tabulator. So we saved $45 million under the previous registrar. She was so pissed off, she quit. But we do have that $45 million. And now the current registrar wants to develop an open source, publicly owned. The government will be responsible for anything that goes wrong, so there's some accountability. There's no private corporation involved. But we still need transparency, and we don't want this to get so computerized that we end up in the same mud that we have been with ES&S OptiScanners, Diebold OptiScanners, where we can't get an audit, we can't count the paper ballots, we're told it's enough already, the OptiScanner is fine, why don't you trust it? But that's a long answer to what's happening, Harvey. LA is developing that system. You saw a prototype, and you worked on a screen, a paper ballot got printed out, that was the very ballot you took with you to the ballot box. You would not be able to take a ballot out of the voting place because that's outlawed by the problems in the past of people selling their vote, saying, proof, this is my ballot, proof how I vote. Okay, give me the $50 you said that you'd pay if I voted for your guy for city council or Congress or president.
Amazing stuff. Well, that's Mimi Kennedy talking to you from Los Angeles, a dedicated activist in terms of protecting the vote. Has Bob Fitzakis joined us yet? Bob, are you with us? Not yet. Okay. Angela Waters, you're from Reader Supported News. You've been following this. You have been dutifully publishing our articles about election theft. And we did seem to squeak by in New Hampshire. I have not seen much evidence that there was vote tampering in New Hampshire. Has anything come across your desk at Reader Supported News, Angela, that would indicate there was shenanigans with the vote count in New Hampshire?
Well, it seems like there were some slight shenanigans in Plymouth, New Hampshire. According to an article in Think Progress, there were students who were coming in, and you're allowed to same-day register in New Hampshire, and they were being turned away without giving the option of signing an affidavit, which is required by law in New Hampshire. So there was some of that, but some activists were able to get the authorities involved, and then I think that stopped at a certain point that day.
Well, we are generally convinced, Mimi and I work with, well, Mimi is a stalwart of the Progressive Democrats of America, and there's been a lot of back and forth since 2008 that Hillary, there were shenanigans in New Hampshire in 2008. And when Bob comes on, we will talk about 1988 in New Hampshire. The most recent piece we published with you at Reader Supported News talked about the introduction, the birth of the electronic vote machine theft age, which happened in the primary in New Hampshire in 1988 when Bush won. George H.W. Bush was the incumbent vice president running against Bob Dole, the senator from Kansas, in the Republican primary, and they went into the primary with Dole leading by 8% on election day in the polls and emerged the loser by 9% to the former head of the CIA, a 17-point shift, which is a virtual statistical impossibility, as anyone would guess. So we think that happened in New Hampshire in 2008, something similar, when Obama was leading and Hillary Clinton emerged as the victor. And I think just for historians' sake, for historical sake, that was the first presidential primary ever won by a woman, as far as I know, in the United States. And this one, this year in New Hampshire, with the victory of Bernie Sanders, was the first time a primary has ever been won by a Jewish guy. So I guess we're making some headway somehow. We'll be looking for a Muslim next, I suppose. But now as we proceed, through the election era here, the primary season, we're headed into South Carolina and into Nevada. Now, Nevada, Mimi, is Nevada a caucus state?
You know, I was just looking at my Nevada. When I wrote my article, the calendar was different, and I just want to make the point of how difficult it is for citizens to get reliable voting information. So what I'm going to do as we talk is go to the wonderful research tool called the Verifier, which is online at verifiedvoting.org. The Verifier is a map of all the voting systems in the United States, and I'm going to look at it in Nevada. It wasn't in my article because, and I do believe it might be caucuses, Harvey. I'm going to let all the listeners know when I find out, but when it's a caucus, it does not use the statewide voting system. You know what I'm saying? So whatever the voting system is in that state, it does not matter.
Last week we had a reporter on from RSN, Angela, your cohort from Reader Supporter News, talking about the caucuses in Iowa. And the Iowa caucuses, Mimi, that sounded like a total circus and completely unreliable, unverifiable. Angela, do you want to paraphrase what was said about the caucuses in Iowa?
Well, I mean, I know that the The Des Moines paper was very concerned about, because it was so chaotic and people had to wait so long, I think they were really concerned about improprieties having taken place. So they did ask for an audit.
Yeah, but you couldn't do an audit, right? There's no way to do an audit in a caucus state.
Right, well, there's no way to do a recount.
Actually.
What's that?
Yeah, there is.
How do you do it?
How you do it is you have to look at the precinct mail-in paper of who stood where and what the head count was in the case of Democrats, in the case of Republicans, of what the actual vote count was of the secret ballots they cast for the presidential candidate. In fact, you know, Harvey, that in Iowa, there was a guy named Edward True, a wonderfully ironic name, who was a vote counter. And so he had on Facebook, he said, I was a counter, here's our results. Much later when he heard that looked on the state party website and saw the results for his precinct were wrong, and by a margin that gave Romney the whole state, and then he reported his results to the state party with a complaint, they at first said, well, we don't know. And they went looking for the paper results, and it went missing for 16 days. But when they found it, it confirmed Edward True's numbers, and they had to apologize to Santorum. I mean, they didn't futz with, what I'm saying, the paper mail-in from that night. So that is a verification of caucus results, and I think both parties demand that precincts, besides phoning in their results, which were transparently collected either by standing around in groups in the head count or having a publicly opened paper ballot count announced that night, the verification has to be mailed into the state party. So you have to look. Now, until they start cheating and somebody can cheat on that paper and a state party can produce a different paper that's not signed by people. Usually they ask poll workers, so I assume they would ask vote counters to sign, yes, these are the results. That's the verification. And by the way, Nevada is a caucus, and on Saturday, February 20th, it's the Democrats caucusing, and it's closed, meaning nobody but Democrats can go there. As you know, in New Hampshire, it was mixed. You could, if you were an independent, you could go wherever you wanted to. And an open primary in South Carolina means that Republicans can vote for the Democratic candidates and Democrats can vote for the Republican candidates. You don't have to only get a party ballot and only stay within your party line.
God, what a system.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it's just completely wacky, up in the sky, and unverifiable. I mean, I assume the caucuses in Nevada will be held in a casino, right? So they'll probably
they're held on different days, which will be interesting. The Democratic results might actually get some publicity since they won't be able to talk about the Republican results until the following Tuesday, February 23rd. That's the Nevada Republican caucuses, according to the calendar in front of me, which I did get off the web today. But again, I say this seems to be arcane, hidden information, and I can only hope it's as good as today's information.
Right. Okay, so we seem to have had a pretty credible outcome in New Hampshire on both sides of the fence. I will tell you how John Kasich came in second in New Hampshire. It's exactly how he won his congressional seat in Ohio way, way, way back when. And Bob Petrakis, our guest here, ran against Kasich for Congress in one election. Bob, have you joined us yet?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so what Kasich did originally here in Central Ohio was to, he was just out of college, basically, and he had a one-term congressman, a Democrat, who had somehow defeated, and I still don't understand how he did it, Sam Devine, the previous congressman who had been in, since the dawn of time. And Kasich, being young and whatever, knocked on every door in the district. Every door in the district. And he won the congressional seat the first time around and then never gave it up until he had nine terms. And that's what he did in New Hampshire, basically. He held like 100 town meetings. So he must have met, most of the Republicans, literally most of the Republicans in the state. And that's how he got a second place finish. Now, whether he's going to be able to duplicate anything like that in the coming days, we don't know. Bob, I wanted to talk to you. We have Angela Waters from Reader Supported News and Mimi Kennedy, the great activist from PDA and Election Protection, and our co-author on a previous article. I want you to explain real quick, so give us the groundwork, on the inaugural event of electronic election theft in American politics back in 1988 with George H.W. Bush. What happened in the primary in New Hampshire in 1988 that gave birth to the era of electronic vote theft in America?
Well, if you go back to 1988, that was the first real widespread use of the computer voting machine. And again, John Sununu, the governor there who had been involved in the computer industry, decided to bring Shooptronics. Ransom Shoup, who had been twice convicted of sort of election tampering in Philadelphia, had a machine company. Later they were renamed Danaher's and used in Franklin County in the controversial 2004 election. But again, Bob Dole's coasting with about an 8-point lead in the final polls. And George Herbert Walker Bush, with these machines, were brought into Manchester, and he ends up winning by about 9 points. It was a 17-point unexplainable shift at the last second. And the Washington Post writes an article saying that, there was this unmeasurable grassroots surge that everyone had missed for the former CIA director. In most democracies, they'd be worried about the CIA director, running, like KGB and Putin. They immediately assume it was what the CIA called a, quote, benign operation when they were investigated by the Church Committee back in the 1970s, where they justified election rigging and admitted to at least 5,000 election rigging operations from local elections around the world to national elections. And they justified it by saying that you could avoid bloody coups, which they were also involved in. They also were nailed. I mean, Richard Lugar saved democracy for the Philippines because when they were rigging the mainframes to put Marcos back in and the workers walked out, Richard Lugar happened to be there as a U.S. representative and U.S. senator, and he wouldn't go along with the Reagan administration in terms of openly rigging the election through mainframe computers. And later when he ran for president as a Republican, the rap against him is he wasn't a team player, meaning he wouldn't go along with the rigged Filipino elections, and thus Marcos was removed as a dictator.
And, wow. And Lugar, of course, was a Republican. And
but in many ways he was the man who helped bring democracy to the Philippines. I mean, Hedrick Smith in The Power Game, in the book and even on the video, has footage of the mainframe computers being shut down and the new tapes being brought in by, people that were working for the dictator. And, of course, as usual, Ronald Reagan said, well, we know there were, irregularities on both sides, but the reality is there was only one dictator, and he had the tape. But the same thing in...
we got a dog in the background.
He doesn't know from radio interviews.
Well, you can argue, of course, that it was Bush's theft of the 1988 primary in New Hampshire was a life-saving act because it saved the agency the inconvenience of having to assassinate Bob Dole and to make the GRAG president of the United States. So there you go. So, Angel Waters at RSM, you must get a lot of material coming through about election theft in addition to ours, and maybe we certainly appreciate your publishing Mimi, Bob, and my piece, and the most recent piece we wrote. And in your on RSM, we published an article about the Ohio plan meant to safeguard our upcoming elections against electronic theft, against these skip and flip strategy of stripping suspected Democrats off the voter rolls, mostly African Americans and Hispanics, then flipping the electronic vote count. What kind of reaction did you get to the piece at RSN?
Oh, well, this is right up our reader's alley, but I have to say that you all seem to be the only one who's writing about this right now. It seems like, there are articles about voter suppression, and there was a study recently, I think, by some researchers at UC San Diego who looked at voting results and found a clear and significant muting of minority turnout in districts where there was voter ID. So most of what's written about now seems to be about these voter ID and voter suppression attempts by Republicans. So I really think that you all have a clear, important, job writing about this and with your book, because if people aren't talking about it. People talked about the Diebold machines back in 2004 and it seems like the whole voting machine issue has really sort of been pushed to the side.
Wow.
So, yeah, I really feel like that. It's not out there right now.
Except for us.
No, there's a reason for that, and it's because the media, and I think the Democratic machine, which I, it's not the Democratic Party, but the Democratic machine doesn't want its numbers deflated by people feeling like they're victims of a rigged system. You can see this playing out in the messaging between Bernie and Hillary now, and you can see what the real effect is. Democrats should not be afraid of telling people that they might be being victimized by election theft, because that gets people mad, and then they want to come out and vote in droves so that whatever is being rigged is going to fail, because there is one way to fight what I call the algorithm effect, They can't set it high enough to defeat a landslide because then it wouldn't pass the smell test. Although they are, I would say, there have been elections that to me make me suspect they're getting bolder and bolder about not caring whether they pass the smell test, as in Kentucky where there was a 14-point shift overnight that defeated a Democratic governor, or in South Carolina where there was a man who lived in his mother's basement who got elected to be the senatorial nominee for the Democratic Party. Somebody did something there because there had been a credible state legislator who would have liked to have run for Senate against Jim DeMint, but it was not to be. They blamed that on race. The man who lived in his mother's basement was a black man, and they went, oh, you know, South Carolina, they elected the black guy, which is an incredibly racist exploitation of just of ethnicity and race in voting. But at any rate, they will not set it so high that it passes the smell test. I mean, doesn't pass the smell test. That's what I believe. And so when you tell Democrats that there's been a red shift and that it goes against Democrats, I think you get more Democrats out to vote, particularly technologically savvy young people who go, uh-uh, this is not going to happen. Everybody thinks kids want to vote on their phones. Well, that's the machine elders who go, you know, the kids that want to vote on their phones. The kids go, no, are you kidding? I write software. I know what can happen. I would never cast a vote from my phone into a tabulator without any kind of verification. So, you know, I'm always watching for that kind of false argument. And one of the false arguments, I think, is don't tell people about electronic vote rigability, because we don't want to suppress the vote because they'll get so depressed. We found out with Progressive America that when we sent emails around about election integrity, fighting election fraud, and talking about it, we got more donations than on any other issue. That was back in 2005 and 2006.
Wow. There have been two recent governor's races come to mind that clearly did not pass the smell test and went through anyway. One was the recall.
Harvey, can I just say something? Is everybody else hearing you perfectly clearly? Because I want to catch every word, and you're a little more muffled than either
Bob or Anna. I'll talk a little louder. How's that?
So, thank you.
So two recent gubernatorial elections come to mind. One was the recall of Scott Walker, where Walker was clearly defeated, and then suddenly in a precinct, somebody walks in with a bag of votes, and he wins.
Was this Waukesha County, where the woman who was in charge of counting the votes, a Republican county official, I think she was the registrar, she suddenly found, I think, 14,000 votes on her computer that she somehow had not factored in, and that gave him the win?
Yeah.
Waukesha County, that doesn't ring a bell for you? Anybody?
Bob, you
yeah, no, that's it.
That's
no,
what
that's
happened.
The, exactly.
That's how he won the recall. He would have lost it. But a woman, as usual, an obedient operative who they probably rewarded in some way, shape, or form, it found some votes on her computer, which she had taken home, as I recall.
Oh, my God. And they let that go through? I mean, that's just astounding.
Yeah, well, and nobody talks about it. That's why we're going, huh, I kind of remember what happened. Can you imagine? Rick Snyder, I'd like to look into that election. Now we have kids poisoned in Flint. How did that happen? Well, Rick Snyder got elected governor of Michigan. How did that happen? I'd like to know. I think they do have paper ballots in Michigan, and they have some great activists, so they've got pretty good elections. It's possible the Republican, somebody wanted change, and they elected him. But he put in all that austerity stuff and all of those emergency managers, and people were bitching about it at the time, and there were some local elections in Benton Harbor, certainly, where they jailed an African-American minister because he was protesting something about a vote that had gone a bit awry, and they put him under house arrest. I think they accused him of a voter fraud because of registering somebody wrong or sending people out to register people to vote. But anyway, they played hardball. and the city manager stuff, they were going to take over those cities, and now we have poisoned kids. But I believe that the same people who go, yeah, we got to poison kids because it's cheaper, are involved in election fraud because they don't have any moral conscience. My two cents.
Well, I think Michigan, Bob, you're a Michigan boy. Michigan has electronic voting machines, don't they? It's Minnesota that has paper ballots.
Yeah,
on the verifier. It's all counted by Optus scanners, so it can also be stolen electronically.
Right, but we actually verified Optus scan theft in 2004 in Miami County in Ohio. We had the election official and the board chair admit that 2,500 votes for Bush came in. They were cyber votes, unexplained by the sign-in votes. And at the time, we speculated it was an algorithm because it seemed like the Bush votes that appeared in a precinct that didn't exist were based on the size of the precinct that was right before it, precinct 8 in the area. It's almost like the votes were added by the computer itself.
That is something that the woman in Wichita, Beth Clark, she is trying to sue to get the poll tapes out of DREs that otherwise have no voter-verified ballot paper trail, but they do have these tapes that come out of the machine at the end of the night that give the aggregate results for everything voted on that machine in each race. And presumably you can look at those numbers and then check them against what's on the Secretary of State's website for the precinct. You'd add up like all 10 voting machines from that precinct's poll tape. But I want to say something. Michigan has paper ballot, and this is kind of a teachable moment, but Optiscanned, counted by ES&S, Diebold, Dominion, ES&S, and Sequoia Dominion. So basically, Dominion, the company in Canada with the undemocratic name Dominion, counts the votes, and ES&S counts the votes. ES&S has had a history of a lot of problems, and I can now tell you whether or not they have an audit law in Michigan. So they're Optiscanning all these paper ballots, but do they in any way Michigan does not conduct post-election audits. So you can Optiscan paper ballots you want. You can set the algorithm to give Rick Snyder 1.7 votes for every, 0.3 votes that a Democrat gets, and Rick Snyder will win, and nobody's auditing. Nobody's going in to do a 2%, 1%, 10% randomly selected precinct count, nothing like it. It's whatever it says. Whatever the Optiscanners say, that's it. That happened in Minnesota, as you know, with Al Franken's election. The Optiscanners reelected Norm Coleman, Republican first elected, when Paul Wellstone's plane went down. Norm Coleman, a champion for right to life. So Norm Coleman was going to go back to the Senate, and by the way, he would tip the balance of the Senate by one to the Republican Party. But Al Franken's campaign demanded a hand count, a recount. And lo and behold, the hand count proved that Al Franken won. So paper ballots are there so you can verify an election. And if you don't use them, you're screwed.
Right. We're talking with Mimi Kennedy, Progressive Democrats of America, and a great election protection activist, Bob Fitrakis, Columbus Free Press, on freepress.org. Bob and Mimi and I have co-authored a lot of stuff, and with Angela Waters from Media Supported News, which has published our last two pieces on this. I mentioned two gubernatorial elections that did not pass the smell test. The other one, of course, is Alabama, where Don Siegelman was clearly reelected, and then miraculously Satan came up with ballots to defeat him. Do you want to discuss that directly, Mimi?
I'd love to, because that's another way that people can steal when there's no citizen oversight. In that case, again, there were paper ballots. And in one county, it was Baldwin County, after everything had been counted and results had been announced, I don't know if all of them were in, but enough were in that Don had been declared the winner, and he went to bed in Alabama going, good, I'm the winner. Well, he woke up in the morning, and Bob Riley, his Republican opponent, was in fact the winner, because at about, you know, sometime after midnight in Baldwin County, and you could see it on the website, and a man confessed to having been there, they simply shifted the reported results. So they took about 6,000 votes, and they shifted them around. And 3,000 of them left. There was another person on the ballot, or, you know, there were more slots than just the two, mano a mano on the ballot. So they shifted around these votes, and 3,000 left Don Siegelman's column, and 3,000 approximately appeared in Bob Riley's column, and that gave him the win. So, of course, the Siegelman campaign is like, let's count those ballots, let's see them. And the attorney general, who was avowed enemy of Don Siegelman because Don had tried to, well, anyway, he was an avowed enemy of Don Siegelman, William Pryor, and he was attorney general. He impounded the paper ballots and said, no one will touch them under threat of indictment. I will indict somebody who touches these paper ballots. They've never been inspected, period, end of story.
And then Don Siegelman was railroaded into prison, for God's sakes.
Yep.
By Karl Rove and the Republican machine.
That's right. First they stole his election, then they indicted him, then they convicted him in a corrupt court, and he's in prison right now. And someday that story will be told and justice will be done. But Alabama is an example of crony corruption that goes very deep into Republican administration, Republican Homeland Security, defense, all of it. And there's an old boys network that's, it's also psychosocial. They don't want certain things known about them. And it's a small state, and some corrupt white men ran it for a long time. And Don challenged, in particular, the casino thing. It's so funny because do you remember the Christian Coalition and Ralph Reed? He was this young, fresh-faced Christian right-to-lifer. And he was involved in helping the Mississippi gambling interests, which were Native American. You know, usually it'd support them. They didn't want Alabama to have gambling, and Don Siegelman wanted this initiative for a lottery that would pay for public education for college. And the lottery, if passed, would have allowed all kinds of gambling, including casino gambling, into Alabama. Well, that was not okay with the Mississippi interests, and they were the money, they say, behind manipulating that election and helping get rid of Don Siegelman electorally.
Well, we now, there's so much we can talk about, but what I want to focus on now with Angela, Mimi, and Bob is what exactly can people do this year to prevent another election from being stolen. Now, Bob and I are about to issue a book called The Flip and Flip Selection of 2016, and the subtitle is Six Jim Crows and the Electronic Election Theft. And people, you know, we do have this deer-in-the-headlights expression. When we talk about this to people, I always think of that moment in the movie A Few Good Men when Jack Nicholson says, truth, you can't handle the truth. And people seem to be unable to handle the idea of the flip-and-strip election strategy because they don't seem to think there's anything they can do about it. So here we are in February of 2016. The election is in November. We need a plan to prevent this election from being stolen, right? Because on election night, in six states in the United States, six swing states. There'll be many more, but these are the swing states: Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Michigan, Iowa, and Arizona. Those six states have Republican governors and Republican secretaries of state, and they will have the power late at night to, in a matter of 60 seconds, to electronically flip the outcome and decide who will be, decide whether we'll have a Republican president. Let's put it that way, because that will be their option. So the question is, at this point in time, how do we stop this? If we want to publish an article
with Angela and Reader Supported News and talk about what people can do to prevent the theft of the 2016 election, what are we going to say?
Bob?
That's okay. A lot.
Well, there's a lot of things we've done in the past. Oh, go ahead.
I was asking Mimi, I know she has some advice for people to be their own advocates, that their votes counted.
Yeah, we've heard a lot from me. Yeah, no, in the past, we've used a variety of different tactics. If you look, for example, in 2004, we didn't act ahead of time, right? We had 7,000 lawyers on the ground for John Kerry, and virtually all of them were useless after the fact.
Yep.
But in 2008, you recall we had the King Lincoln Brunsville case, and we actually deposed Mike Connell the day before the election. And in his deposition, he exposed the fact they were working with Triad and Jeff Averbeck at Smart Tech in Chattanooga. They were all working together. But 2012, I sued. Cliff Arnebeck handled the case. And we sued federally and at the state level on the same day. And, of course, the federal judge, a Republican appointee, refused to let our expert witness, who had been working for the NSA for 37 years, was one of 50 certified computer experts, wouldn't let his testimony stand, claimed he wasn't an expert. But the state judge held the case open for 30 days. Also, we had a complete network. We used a lot of people out of the California area, from Berkeley, the Bay Area out there, to help us monitor all 88 county computers in Ohio, and we had flying squads of lawyers and activists who weren't afraid to, who were actually certified as Green Party members, though all of them were, you know, progressive Democrats. But we created the Green Party itself as a legal entity, so we have observer status in every precinct in Ohio and at every board of election. Myself, you know, I went to most of the Near East Side here that had lost votes with long lines, and I found over 100 black males forced to vote provisionally, and the Republican judge in charge wouldn't look in the book to see if they were registered. And as an election observer, I shouldn't do this, and I know it's against protocol, but I told him that he should be in jail. He was stealing people's votes, and we should call the cops on him. Of course, he called the cops on me. But when I said that, there was actually a Department of Justice representative in the polling place who stepped forward and said the problem needed to be resolved. I also brought in some international observers who were in town, invited them in the polling places so they could observe, even though that was probably not legal. So I think people should use a combination of tactics, but really watching the central tabulators, as we did on the marijuana issue, and found, you know, it passing 2-1 and then it flipping in Dayton as well as Ashtabula County. Now, they won't release any of the paper, and they claim they didn't keep the logs, but we've been able with frame grabs to actually prove they're flipping votes. In 2004, right, we were able to prove that 19,000 votes came in after 100% of the vote was counted in Miami County. 19,000 votes came in, 2-1 for Bush, huge net gain, at 3:30 in the morning. And we were able to expose that. The key thing is to expose it while it's actually happening or stop it, through direct confrontation with these election officials.
That's okay. That's right, Bob, and I'm certainly hoping, as I listen to you, can you tell us if that network will be in place again as the final backstop on Election Day in 2016? Because I'm going to talk about what we can do leading up to. But is that network going to be in place that was so... I always wondered and was happy and didn't want to ask, because I believe in discretion sometimes when you're fighting people who are doing stuff in secret. But I love that you knew that ESNS was trying to apply a patch. That's the language I've learned for it. It doesn't exactly give me a visual of what they're doing, but you knew somehow they were doing it, and that's what you took to court, saying they can't do this. It's not certified. It's software being used in an election. It's all supposed to be certified beforehand. This is new. This is illegal to use. They got to not use it. So I hope that will be in place as a backstop, as I say, so that all the efforts that we exercise prior to the election won't be leaked out some horrible backdoor.
Yeah, no, and we really should thank the moderate Republicans who believe in democracy who are leaking most of this stuff out of the Secretary of State's office.
Well, my daddy was a Republican. I can thank a Republican who's honest and true. I can. Yeah,
no,
I can.
They're really, we're getting direct links of employees who would lose their job if it went public. And we just had a leak out of the Secretary of State's office on the electronic poll books and their coordination, their remote access and a possible Bluetooth that, and also tactics that are being used. I won't mention the counties where they're telling people in the primary, to vote electronically, and they're going to give them, code. The little squiggly things, and to fill out their ballots ahead of time and bring them in, and they'll help them download it into a real
vote. That's part of LA's new voting system. It's called a practice ballot, and it's for the kids, don't you know, so they can fill out their whole ballot on their phone, and then with the QR code that embeds all their choices or whatever, they... You know, that's their practice ballot, and they aim it at some sort of scanner, and up comes their ballot. If there's a ballot involved, if it's a DRE that they're aiming at, it just goes into the DRE, and God help it. If they aim it at a ballot printer, which is what's going to happen in L.A., all of that phone work and all those digits actually produce a paper ballot that can be counted. If we want to, and I'm going to make it my job to make sure Americans want to count paper ballots everywhere, like being on jury duty, only more fun, and not take as long.
Here we have a situation.
Yeah, that's a coming because it's a way they think of having people spend less time at the polling place. If it's coordinated with the DRE or any kind of vote counting, no. If it just produces a paper ballot, maybe, because the voter's there to verify. They can go like, hey, I wrote this on my phone, and it didn't come out right at all. Then they're going to have to write out or ballot mark whatever. They're doing a real paper ballot. They'll just not use their phone for the election. But I still think it's all kinds of problems with anonymity and so forth. People will be able to hack your phone and find out how you're voting, and I don't think that's a good idea. So another bad idea coming down the pike.
Well, here we have.
But anyway, I wanted to talk about what we can do. And I don't know if anybody can organize this, but each individual voter can check registration because unlike a vote, it's not anonymous. It's your name, and you can go to your Secretary of State website or your county registrar website, whoever is managing the data for the voter rolls for your voting jurisdiction. It's often a county, but state voter rolls have taken over now, these huge databases. And you can go in there before the election. I would check it every week before the election to make sure somebody hasn't thrown you off the voter rolls for some reason or other. And they can do it right up to the night before the election. But you want to keep checking it. And if you're off the voter rolls, you need to access your county government. Not easy to do, but you can try and say, what's wrong? I want to get back my registration. You can even make a screenshot or print out when you see that you are on the voter rolls. Print it out and date it and go, here I am on July 1st.
I am there. And if you're not there on October 31st, you can say, hey, what happened to my registration? This is me. We can all do that, and it's getting to the point where we need to do that homework, that office work, if we're serious about catching these people at fraud. And I think we all want to do that, so that's a piece of homework we should all do. If you don't get any response from your county, they don't talk to you, they don't care, you go right to your local paper or you get on social media and you say, my county is participating in fraudulent purge of the registration rolls. Accuse them of it. And then let them get in touch with you and go, no, we're not. No, we're not. How dare you smear us? Well, fine. I won't smear you. Just put me back on the voter rolls. We can all do
we'll
that.
Coordinate that. Mimi, we'll coordinate that with social media. It's an important thing. Everybody needs to check their individual registration. Now, here's the big question. Here's the $64 trillion question. After we go into the election, people have done their best. And there is, you know, even Hillary Clinton is talking about messing with the voter rolls and the strip part of the election problem. What do we do about the flip part? It seems to me at this point in time, our only check on how an election might have gone is with exit polling. And I'm assuming that there's going to be a major attack on exit polling at some point in time, and somebody's going to say it's un-American or undemocratic, and they'll try and kill exit polling. But we get to the point then where we have the election, the moment where the election is flipped. What can we do about that? Bob, is there anything at all that we can do to counteract what was done in Ohio 2004 when Michael Connell, as you mentioned, coordinated a flipping of the Ohio vote count electronically with the servers in the basement in Chattanooga, Tennessee? When that magic moment comes, what can the public do?
Well, again, I think if, you know, the FBI cyber squad, I think there's got to be the massive monitoring. In almost every one of these cases, and what looks like the actual fraud, there's always been some computer glitch and key computers go down, these state supercomputers in Ohio. It looked like when they were planning it last time in Cleveland. What we find, if you've got a network of people, literally we had hundreds and hundreds of people calling up the boards of elections and emailing them and saying, we're watching you, we're monitoring you, we see your computers have gone down. The problem in the past, right, when somebody calls a homeland a security alert level 10 and takes the punch card ballots to a warehouse, people know it's wrong, but nobody says anything.
Right.
We've encouraged people and trained people to take a rest. I mean, I've even had drivers with me to go in because I know inevitably they're going to call the cops on us. So we've had, you know, and again, we want the police reports. We don't want any violence or any disruption, but we want a record of what's going on. And we found that these networks, and we've really gotten tremendous help from the people of California and the Bay Area in many ways. I mean, they've alerted us in Ohio to some of these rural Republican strongholds, their computer stopping. And, you know, we've been able to set up decentralized networks of these flying squads that include lawyers and election observers and people not afraid to go inside. And again, we do have places for them because the Green Party allows us to appoint people to observe for us. So we're talking right now, you know, with the Fight for 15 people, with progressive Democrats, with the Sanders people, and others about this situation. And quite frankly, I mean, I talked to Hillary in 2005, Hillary Clinton. She knows a lot about the machines and election theft possibilities. I mean, she was one of the most knowledgeable people on the different types of machines. I was quite surprised at how much knowledge she had on election fraud.
Well, here's
that's encouraging. Why wouldn't she
thing.
Be more forthcoming about worries about it, Bob? Why doesn't she do Why doesn't she worry for the citizens?
I mean, having met regularly with the Obama people in 08 when they were saying, don't say anything public, but we're worried day and night and meeting with technology people and people like myself. You know, on the one hand, they're not worried, there's no problem. On the other hand, the Obama people were obsessed with, you know, people like Michael Connell and what had happened after Jennifer Bruner's, the Secretary of State's Everest study that showed a back door.
Angela Waters, you want to jump in with this real quick?
Angela, we're
almost out of time. Tell us how to get to RSN and tell us what you want to say, and we'll move quickly. But tell, make your contribution if you would.
Oh, sure. You can get to RSN through readersupportednews.org or just rsn.org.
And RSN, Reader Supported News, has been one of the few of the websites that's really been effectively carrying our stuff, including the last article Mimi, Bob and I wrote, and other stuff that Bob and I have written. And we want to thank you, Angela, for being with us and for
Yeah, it's a great, great news organization. It's been number one in our house for me and my husband for a long time. And, this, we really
That's great.
Like
we're really happy to put it out there.
Yeah.
Because you all really are the only people bringing this up.
Yeah. Good. Okay. I'm glad you're. Well, it's thrilling to know that you're on it. Yep.
Well, very good. Thank you, Angela. Now, and I want to throw one thing out there. I don't think it's a federal law, but maybe in most of the states, precincts are required to post the results on the somewhere in you know visible to the public once they've compiled the votes in a precinct. So
That's
the
right.
question then becomes, and we did think about this, Bob, we talked about this in Ohio. I'm wondering if we could build a national network through PDA and other election protection organizations to have photograph all the reports on the every precinct door in America. I think there's like 3,500 precincts in America. I wonder if we could
photograph. There's 4,000 just in L.A.
maybe 35,000. But however many there are, if we could get a network to photograph the posted outcome of the election on every precinct wall and compile that and get our own audit of the
I like that
I
idea, Harvey, but I want to say it's not a but. Just then we have to add, and I'm bringing this up because I have one more thing to say. Provisional votes will not be part of that precinct number, of course. It doesn't matter. We still need the precinct number. And you could get it off of those poll tapes, and it should be posted. The precinct numbers in each race. Provisional votes are not counted until... Basically, the election has been called. And provisional votes are multiplying for this reason. More and more states...
Mimi.
Registering people vote by mail without even asking them if they want to be vote by mail. They get a vote by mail ballot at the address they registered, which may or may not be where they live. They don't bring it in. They go to vote at the polls and they go, you can't vote regularly because we sent you a vote by mail ballot. And where is it? And if you don't produce it, somebody else might be voting it or you voted it. You have to vote provisionally. And increasingly, there are huge percentages of provisional votes that can throw an election and you won't really find that reflected. And nor will you find absentee ballots reflected in the at-the-polls precinct numbers. I'm just saying it'll be about a half of the vote, but increasingly you'll be getting vote by mail and provisional ballots coming in.
We will come back to this. Mimi, thank you so much. Bob, Angela, we'll be back on the Solartopia Hour. Thank you.
Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia.
The nuclear plants.